I've got a tip for a class one bounty hunter. There's a kid here you might be interested in.
Once again, Bucketheads, Mavar Tigar. Welcome to our 248th Boo Bane the Baby Napper episode of Manavision. I'm your host, Narg Hai Tom, and thank you so much for checking out this small independent Star Wars podcast. We're so glad you're here. Reach out to us on the socials. We're at Mando_Vision on Twitter and Instagram. Email the show, mandovisiontom@gmail.com. Make sure to like, subscribe, follow, and share this show with all the Mandalorians in your covert. All right, friends, we're back. This is the first of the two new episodes that have come out this week. We're here to talk about the first episode, and wow, is this one dark. This has got some real darkness to it, friends. And I loved it, but I mean, this is like showing us the very dark underbelly of the Empire as this episode opens, and what we see, and we get like the neighbors turning on neighbors, and it's you know, for a few measly credits, and it's gross and horrible, and we all hope that Aqualish is sitting in the bathtub and his toaster falls in and fries him. That was dark too, I'm not gonna lie, but I hope the guilt eats that Aqualish and something bad happens to him. I don't feel that bad about saying it. I really don't. That's some mumba bee. Oh, yeah. And so this episode, what's really unique about it is, I'm pretty sure in the history of the Bad Batch episodes, this is the first one without a current or former member of Clone Force 99 as a character. Like, this is entirely from the Imperial perspective. And it's ugly. You know, we get to go inside the vault in Mount Tantus, see one of the things they're keeping back there. And, you know, I don't think we're too shocked by what we see necessarily. Because, I mean, we know they're up to bad things in that Empire. But sort of like the realization of it, and Dr. Emery Carr's realization of it, as it's all sort of like, you know, right before her eyes, is... it's fairly intense, and it's a, you know, I've seen the word tough watch thrown around, and I didn't think it was a tough watch, but it is revealing, you know, just how dark the Empire is, and what Dr. Hemlock is up to in his endeavors for Project Necromancer. And we're going to talk a lot about it. We're going to get into those specifics because, again, it is from that Imperial perspective, but we got a lot to talk about with Dr. Emery Carr, and maybe cast a little speculation out there to see what's going to stick in these final episodes of the series. So, without further ado, I think we should just kind of get into it. No long giant preamble this week, if I can avoid it. Which, you guys know, I'm not always the best at avoiding not going on some kind of tirade in the beginning of the episode. So this is Star Wars The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 10, Identity Crisis. Original air date, March 3rd, 2024. Written by Amanda Rose Munoz and directed by Saul Ruiz. Our primary cast for this week, we got a lot of people in it. We got Shelby Young, Dee Bradley Baker, Corey Burton, Jimmy Simpson, Keisha Castle-Hughes, Steven Stanton, Gwendolyn Yeo, Shinitsen, Olin W. Whelan, Seth Green, and Steve Blum. A lot of those people, you will know exactly who they play. And again, a lot of voice cast in this one. And our plot for this week's episode: Emery confronts the dark secrets behind the Hemlock's scientific research. That's going to be the broad stroke there. And again, we're going to talk a little bit about that. What little bit we know about Emery's background, we might sort of do a little speculation on how these things may kind of tie together at the very, very end. And yeah, we are going to get into it. This is a dark one. And again, it doesn't take away from the quality of the episode. Like, yeah, there's baby napping and all kinds of horrific things going on, experimentation on children. But it's a really good episode. I really do enjoy it. And again, just showing you how evil the Empire is sort of like the highlight of the dark times, right? Like, you know, just kind of getting into like the nitty gritty and just showing it is, I think, very, very excellent. All right, so let's go ahead, get into the episode proper. You know what that means. It's time. Strap on your buckets. Let's go.
What's the issue?
Progress in the lab has stalled since Nala Se's confinement.
The Kaminoan can no longer be trusted.
Do you trust me? I've spent years working by your side. With a proper clearance, I could be more useful.
You wish to be the new chief scientist, Dr. Carr?
I believe I have earned it.
Very well. Let's begin by bringing you up to speed on Project Necromancer.
All right, so let's go ahead and back it up just a little bit, because our episode actually opens up on the planet Karad. We get to see a marketplace, and we get to connect with, I believe you say it, Eilish and her son Bairn, who are Tarlafars, which you may remember were first introduced in the Solo movie. And Bairn, let me tell you what, Star Wars does this, in like pretty much all the animated series, there's always a cute baby introduced in basically every show we've seen on Disney Plus. They did this in the Clone Wars. They've done this in in the Bad Batch. They obviously did this in the Mandalorian. And you know, the Tarlafars, kind of a cute looking species to begin with, and then you show as one of their babies, and it's like, oh my goodness. So I don't know how everyone just doesn't fall in love with this child, Bairn, and his plight as his mother attempts to protect him. Once the horrible Aqualish neighbor decides he's gonna rat him out for a few measly credits, but that's the situation here. You know, they're in the market. Bairn shows some force ability. It startles some people, throws some people off. But this horrible Aqualish senses an opportunity for financial gain, and decides to rat out his neighbors instead of helping and aiding his neighbors hide from the Empire. He rats him out, and we will revisit that horrible, horrible decision later in the episode. But yeah, Eilish, her son Bairn, Tarlafars, met them in Solo. There's your vital information. So, well, vital, up to you. Now we're going to cut back to Tantus, and we're going to see Dr. Hemlock doing Hemlockian things, right? Looks like he's working on creating some more CX troopers, getting them ready. Later in the episode, on his datapad, we'll see what looks like sort of like a version 2.0 of the CX armor, to be determined. We'll see if that's actually what's happening there. But trying to catch glances of the information that was on his datapad was challenging, especially trying to parse out what it was. But it looks like in this first one, it's just sort of like the CXs that we've seen before. Later in the episode, we'll see what looks like a modified version of the CX armor, and we'll see if that comes to pass in the next few episodes or so. But Dr. Emery Carr approaches Hemlock to let him know that the progress has stalled with Nala Se in confinement. And Hemlock's like, well, we can't The Kaminoan can no longer be trusted. And that's when Emery Carr makes her pitch that, well, hey, I've been working with you for a long time. Give me a crack at this nut. And it's not like Hemlock gives her a ringing endorsement. He's just more sort of like, all right, why not? Let's just do this and see what happens. So he begins to give a tour to Dr. Emery Carr, and they get he sort of lays out what it all entails. He refers to the subjects and the sublevels that she will have access to, and of course, access to the vault. And in the vault here, we also see we see one of the big dark secrets of Mount Tantus, and that is this chamber that opens up, and we see some tables and small children at these tables playing games. Impossible Stack and Tower Puzzle are the names that were thrown around on StarWars.com today when I checked to see if they had any updated information for the episode. One of the games looks very much like Jenga, or like a Tetris-ish kind of game, I suppose, in a sense. But more stacking than Tetris, I suppose. So we'll go with the Jenga reference. But let's go ahead and see. Emery Carr sees the children, and, you know, she's kind of, I don't want to say dead emotionally, not like to the extent that Hemlock is, but she's trying to play it cool. She's trying to play it cool when she sees these children, but clearly she is surprised to see these children here.
These particular three were selected because of their high M count.
Why children? Are they not adults that could serve this purpose?
There are few adults left with such characteristics.
Of course, he's referring to the Jedi that were all massacred in Order 66. So yeah, children are the easiest to find, I suppose, with high M-count levels that they're looking for. And Hemlock's going to elaborate a little bit further on why children.
Children are easier to attain and more agreeable to these subjugations. They're unaware of why they're here and what they possess. As you know, M-count cannot be directly replicated from the source. However, Nalase knew of another way, which is why she aided in Omega's escape. The young clone's blood is the only binder that's proven to be compatible with their DNA to recreate their M-count levels, and why Omega must be found. Testing should proceed as planned. We must be prepared for every possibility once she is recovered.
Sir.
All right, so Hemlock gives us vital, absolutely vital. I'm using that word vital a lot this week, but that is a really big piece of information of why Omega is so important. Like, we're finally getting the details here. Her blood is a binder, right? So based off my limited scientific background, it's, you know, as we know, the problem with cloning is you can't do a direct blood transfusion of M count, right? So it sounds like Omega's blood is needed to sort of facilitate a successful transfer of high M count blood into a clone body. That's sort of what it sounds like to me. If anyone out there has a more comprehensive background in cloning and blood transfusions, please let me know. But that also makes us go back to last week's episode and sort of wonder, like, if Omega truly does have that high M count, you know, maybe Ventress wasn't lying when she said that she wasn't going to be capable of wielding the Force. But we've seen that, and has been sort of talked to us, shared with us since the Ahsoka series, is that limited M count doesn't necessarily mean you can't wield the Force, as long as you try to harness those skills like Sabine Wren has. So, again, there may be some M count in, enough M count in Omega's blood that she will be able to use the Force to some degree. Or, again, Ventress could be lying, but her blood still has those properties that they need for the transfusion. And maybe Omega's blood is just like the perfect thing. It is the binder that they need and a high M count. You know, perhaps it's like the grand prize, if you will, for the blood transfusions for cloning. Again, we still need a little bit more information, but that's a big piece of the mystery of why they need Omega here, is that her blood helps facilitate, at the very least, it helps facilitate the transfusion of high M-count blood samples into a clone body to make sure that the clone body can successfully wield the Force, as Palpatine will be wont to do once he is on his quest for immortality. And, yeah, so that's a big, big, big piece of the puzzle that we needed here for why Omega is just so gosh darn important and why Nala Se was protecting her. Because, again, Nala Se has no interest in seeing Palpatine gain this immortality. She just watched the Empire level Tupaca City and her people. And you know, I would imagine that has a big piece of why she has no interest in helping the Empire live forever. So as Hemlock is called away, Emery Carr is observing these children in the facility, and she's about to meet Eva, SP-54, who's an Itachi, and who is going to be attempting to sort of bond with Dr. Carr. And this is the beginning of... Let me go back a little bit here. Let's think about the first episodes of the season, where it's Omega in captivity on Tantus, doing those tours, those rounds with Emery Carr. And we think about the type of person that Omega is, a sort of relentlessly optimistic and hopeful person. And now Emery Carr is in a position where she's meeting another child who is kind and soft-spoken and, you know, just wants to go home, but is looking to make a friend in Dr. Carr the way that she did with Nala Se before Nala Se was removed from the project. And it's going to put Emery in a position where she has to sort of begin to confront what is in front of her. And again, the limited information we have about Emery Carr and her background is we know that she's a clone, right? And that she grew up with Hemlock, right? So was she a test subject like these children are? And so she has an instant soft spot for them? Or will she be able to maintain that scientific detachment that Hemlock insists on sharing or insists on having with these subjects? And we're about to see how cold and dispassionate he is towards them. We'll play that clip here in just a minute. But Eva will attempt to bond with Emery. She's going to see Jax, the other subject, SP-32, who's a Marilon, and attempt an escape later in the episode, and get stun blasted for his efforts by a fully grown Imperial commando. And it's just Emery's going to be tested here. This new position that she sought after, you know, letting her ambitions drive her, now putting her in a position where she has to confront something that she'd been shielded from, right? Like, she didn't know what was going on in the vault. Like, everything was very compartmentalized here on Tantus. And now that she is the chief scientist of it, she has to face these dark, dark things that are going on. And let's go ahead and play the clip here where Hemlock will just show his outlook on these children.
Hello.
I like your glasses.
Thank you. What is your name?
Dr. Carr. Limit your personal interactions with the specimens. They are scientific assets. Nothing more.
Of course, Doctor.
So as that scene closes out, we do see one of the test subjects, the little boy. We will find his name out to be Jax, a Marilon, like I said, like Barriss Luminari. Like Luminara Unduli and like Barriss Offee of that same species, so that's why they may look familiar. There's also a third subject in the room, and despite my best efforts, I cannot determine that species. Or it looks like a little girl, but perhaps they are non-binary. I don't know for sure. I wonder if it's a species that we will get to spend more time with in The Acolyte or one of the other shows upcoming. Or maybe even later in The Bad Batch, we'll find out a little bit more about what I think may be a new Star Wars species. And what we see at the end of the scene is Jax studying the data pads. So we know this kid right here, he's going to attempt to have a breakout here and get the heck out of this lab. And how that's all going to work out. And listen, he's in something called the Vault. it doesn't sound good for him to begin with. And now we're going to cut back to Kar-Arad as the phone call has been made. And Eilish is going to be doing her best to protect her son. But a shovel is not going to cut it against Cad Bane. So yes, Cad Bane reemerges here. And we see Cad Bane doing Cad Bane things. This is not out of character for him. Back in season 2 of The Clone Wars, we see him abducting younglings in the Children of the Force episode. So not surprising that he is the class one of the class one bounty hunters being used to bring in children that have high M counts. And he has his own little test to administer to make sure that he's not wasting his time and that he's going to get paid for delivering these children. I'm not surprised that they went with Cad Bane for this. You know, when they first introduced the idea of these class one bounty hunters being what the Empire uses, I think Cad Bane was the first thought I went to. But there's a part of me, like, I still really would like to see Boba Fett make an appearance in this show. As was hinted at the Book of Boba Fett, you know, Cad Bane knows that he's done some dirty, despicable deeds for the Empire, and this would be a nice way to sort of show that. Nice is not the right word, but this would go a long way to showing the beginning of that reputation that we know Boba Fett to have by the time of Empire Strikes Back. So, and also, I'm honestly dying to just see Boba Fett interact more with clones. It's something that we've not seen a lot of since his time in impersonating, a clone cadet back again. That was early in Star Wars: The Clone Wars, maybe in season 2. I still want Boba Fett and Omega to meet at some point. But again, Boba's made it pretty clear that he has no interest in the clone. He feels no loyalty towards the clones, which is why I think kind of setting him up as the person turning in clones and going after the clones and rounding up Force-sensitive children, goes a long way to kind of giving him that bad guy, anti-hero reputation that we think he will have, that he clearly has earned. So why don't we show that? Why don't we see that? And I'm not sure what the answer is on that. Maybe Boba was going to show up later in the season. TBD. But yeah, not super surprised that they go with Cad. And I mean, Cad's awesome. Let's be honest. And we already know this about Cad, so it's not like a huge shocking revelation that he does this. And again, we get to see the return of Toto 360, and putting a child. They call it a pram, but it looks like a bit like a lockbox to me. So not the most humane thing, but it is sort of amusing watching after Eilish has been rendered unconscious by Cad Bane's stun blast, and Bairn is being loaded up into like that pram slash lockbox. That Toto 360 has to figure out a toy to give the child to stop him from crying and angering Cad Bane some more. Let's go ahead and play a little bit of that sequence here.
That'll do.
I am not a nanny droid. You there. Stop that. I did it.
Let's move.
Okay, so Toto 360 bringing like some levity to an absolute horrifying moment of child abduction. I don't know how to process that, right? Like, we're seeing something so dark and horrible, a child being stolen from his mother who's been rendered unconscious by a stun blast. But we're getting moments of levity from Toto 360, who's overjoyed that he's made a child be quiet because he gave him their dolly. it amuses and horrifies all at the same time. I'm going to play the rest of the sequence here as Toto and Bane make their exit here, and Cad Bane is going to pay off the tipster. I sort of love the even Cad Bane has no time for this Aqualish fool, and just chucks credits at the guy because he's pathetic, and Cad Bane knows this. Let's go ahead and play that.
Thanks for the tip.
All right, and then as the Aqualish is scooping up the credits, I can't read the Aqualish that well, but you sort of wonder maybe for a moment if this person feels regret over doing this horrible thing for just that pittance that he was given. I don't know for sure. I sure hope he feels awful. And again, if a toaster fell in his bathtub, I wouldn't feel that bad about it for him. So, you know, or you know, maybe. Maybe Eilish goes there and tosses a toaster into his bathtub for him. You know, I'd be okay with that too. She should be out there getting the revenge. Again, maybe enough about that. I'm getting a little dark with things. But yeah, Cad Bane doing Cad Baneian things. Not a surprise. So now we'll go back to Tantus and to kind of Dr. Emery Carr's first full day on the job. And she's trying to be dispassionate, like Hemlock has advised and directed. You know, these are not children. They are simply specimens. They are scientific curiosities and nothing more. And she attempts to adhere to that. But Eva, the inquisitive child that she is, just won't let it go.
Hello, SP-54.
My name's Eva. What's yours?
You may refer to me as Dr. Carr.
What happened to Mistress Nalase? She hasn't been back.
She is no longer overseeing this project.
Why not?
That is not your concern.
Oh, but she said she'd find out for me.
Find out what?
When I'll be going home. Can you find out for me?
I will look into it.
Thank you, Dr. Carr.
So that's just another level of horrifying as well, because clearly Empire is telling these children they will get to go home at some point, which I think we all know is a horrible, horrible lie, and the Empire will have no plans of letting these children go anywhere. All right, so now Carr is going to move over to Jax's cell, and again, Jax's little kid, who we know is going to be planning his big escape, and surprise, surprise, he attempts it. He steals Carr's data pad. He's seen how it works. But they immediately shut this down. There is no escape. And again, I'm going to play this clip because it's just sad. It's just sad and horrifying. And again, it makes us wonder about Emery's background here. Is this the way she was raised and brought up? Was she in similar circumstances because of the way that she attempts to address Jax, and then when she tries to reprimand the trooper for blasting a child with a full-on stun blast.
SP-32.
Stay away from me!
It's all right.
No! Let me out of here!
You're safe, SP-32.
That's not my name! They said I could go home. I just want to go home.
Set to stun. What's the situation?
Blasters are not necessary. I have everything under control. Don't!
Secure him in his room.
Your actions were extreme, Commander. He's only a child.
The specimen attempted to escape. I was following protocol.
So there you go, Scorch laying it down. Better than, you know, sounds like it's coming out of Hemlock's mouth directly. No, the specimen. These are things that Emery is struggling with. And again, it makes me consider what her background is. We know she was raised up by Hemlock. Was it in a similar circumstance as this? It's fair to wonder if that is the case. So I think at this point it's fair to say that Emery is sort of struggling a little bit with what she's seen and how things are being handled there. So she's going to go see Nalase. And yeah, let's just play this out.
Mistress Say, I have questions regarding your work on Project Necromancer.
You have taken my place, then.
I have.
Which means you've been to the vault. And seen the specimens.
They're children, like I was. Was your plan to discard them too?
The Empire will keep them in order to control them.
They don't belong here.
No, they do not. But none of this was my choice. I had to protect Omega.
And what about the other children?
I did what I could. Now they will look to you. What will you do, Emery?
There is nothing I can do. I don't have that kind of power.
Don't you?
All right, so Emery's got a lot to think about here. And again, she does sort of confirm that her past was a lot like this. And maybe, I do think she said something like that when, late in season two? I can't remember exactly, but we know she was a clone who was discarded and apparently part of some other testing that was going on tier two. So yeah, now she's in a very, very dicey position. But again, does Emery Kara have the ability to grow a spine and do the right thing in the face of all this horrible, horrible evil? By the end of this episode, she's going to show some compassion. But when it comes time to do the right thing, remember, she tried to stop Omega from escaping too, just like she tried to stop Jax. At one point, does that change and she begins to be the one to help facilitate escapes, if she even has that in her makeup? All right, so at this point, Dr. Carr is going to make the decision to go and help retrieve the new specimen. Can't wait for that. But in the meantime, Dr. Hemlock has been ordered to make contact with Governor Tarkin immediately. And let's go ahead and play that conversation because this is, again, very Tarkin-esque, and I sort of love it for that.
Governor Tarkin, to what do I owe this summons?
Questions have been raised regarding the financial impact your facility is having upon Imperial resources. And now, additional funds have been diverted at your request?
That is correct. It is for a project that is of personal interest to the Emperor.
Which is what?
I'm afraid that's classified.
Perhaps there is some assistance I may provide, seeing this is of such importance.
The funding is all I require. It is worth the expenditure.
You had better hope so. If this project fails to yield proper results, it won't bode well for your operation. Or for you, Doctor.
So, I like this scene because it shows that even on when it comes to Project Necromancer, that even Tarkin is out of the loop. One of the most trusted people that Palpatine has, in his command, who seems to be in charge of a great many projects of the Emperor's. This is one that he's been kept out in the dark on, and that does not seem to sit well with him. So even though he has no idea what this project is, he's willing to make these threats that hey, this won't work out well for you. This goes bad. And Tarkin doesn't even know what the project is. It's kind of great. But Hemlock recognizes that Tarkin is a powerful ally of the Emperor's, and crossing him is not a good idea. So it's a lot like what we saw in Rogue One with director Krennic. And Krennic had a very adversarial relationship with Tarkin. It was very territorial and protective of the Death Star project. Hemlock seems to be a much cooler customer when it comes to Tarkin. Obviously, he doesn't want Tarkin involved, but he plays it a lot differently than Krennic did. And I think that's to his advantage. But he's also... As the communication ends, I think Hemlock, you see some concern on his face that now his project is on Tarkin's radar, And that doesn't necessarily bode well for the way that Hamlet likes to work. You know, he likes to work in the darkness, in the shadows, like answering only to the Emperor. Tarkin might be a hindrance to getting done what he wants to get done. And I think Hemlock has to consider how he'll continue to play Tarkin to make sure he gets what he needs, but keeps Tarkin at arm's length from and away from this project and Tantus itself. And so this spurs him to reach out to the CX trooper who we last saw battling Crosshair. And again, this is that moment where we see that data pad and sort of a new updated 2.0 version of the CX armor. But now, with Tarkin kind of sniffing around, Hemlock knows it is of the utmost importance to get Omega back so they can move forward with this project and keep Tarkin away from it.
I require an update.
I tracked down the Trandoshan and pulled some intel out of her. She gave...
So clearly they're referring to Cid, who obviously we know in the first season and a half or so was aiding the Bad Batch, sort of. and again, we knew that, as we were told, you know, when they parted company, that Cid was definitely a liability to turn on them at some point. And it sounds like this CX trooper pulled, as he uses that word, some information out of her.
Gave up the name of a pirate has been in contact with the target. I'm searching for her now.
The other operatives aren't ready to join you in the field.
I can handle it on my own.
Can you really? Because you've already failed once. No more mistakes. Do not return without Omega.
And I believe it's in the next episode where we follow the CX trooper who is going to locate Phi and access Phi's navicomputer. I think we get a little bit more evidence that the CX will eventually be revealed to be Tech. But who's to say for sure at this point? All right, so now we'll cut back to Dr. Carr. Emery has gone back to help retrieve this new specimen. She feels it's part of her job to do so. So we arrive at a space station orbiting above Coruscant to meet with Bane, who will be delivering the child. And, well, let's just go ahead and play it. And especially that moment where Emery will be a bit surprised at the age of this new specimen. You thought kids were bad? Oh boy, Emery, you are in trouble.
You're not the usual Imperial, Lizan.
I'm here to inspect the specimen. Who I am is none of your concern.
Toro, bring out the kid.
This specimen is younger than I expected.
Then he'll be less trouble.
I need to test him for confirmation.
My payment.
How many others like this have you captured?
Let's just say I'm good at my job.
And where did this child come from?
Asking questions like that, you give away more than you think.
It's all here, Mr. Bane.
Until next time.
So I very much love that comment from Bane when Emery's asking questions. Bane very astutely observing how uncomfortable Emery is with this whole situation. And it's funny because, again, she goes toe-to-toe with Bane, doesn't bat an eye, sees this child, and everything changes for her. And that's on her face, in her words, all of it. And Bane is highly aware of that. So we'll go back to Tantus now, and Emery attempts to resume her day-to-day activities. But when it comes to SP-54, also known as Eva, Eva's now very upset with Emery for saying that nothing bad was going to happen to Jax, but Jax is in isolation because of his escape attempt. So the way Eva views it is that Emery lied to her, and now she's upset and not talking to Emery. Emery goes back to testing blood. You know, we're up there on the blood cylinder dial thingamajigger, and she's flipping through on her data pad charts for all the subjects, and she comes across the chart of Omegas. And again, she sort of has a moment. She might as well have been staring at an 8x10 of Omega at that point, and thinking fondly of the child of who, you know, was her previous assistant and who maybe awakened some level of empathy in her that had been dormant for some time. And so we find out that Emery had not gotten rid of Omega's straw Tuca doll that she had made. And she's going to leave this dolly as a gesture for Eva so that when their little cells are opened up at the beginning of the day, this Tuca doll will be waiting for Eva as something of a peace offering and a sort of moment of compassion from Emery. And that's how our episode ends. Again, the similarities, you know, it's become abundantly clear on this rewatch for me that this upbringing is what she's seen these force sensitive children, these high M count children going through is similar to her background as a child. So she feels for them in a way that she hadn't in quite some time. And it's awakening something in her. But again, she's been a defender of Hemlocks for so long. She views Hemlock as the person who saved her, who rescued her from being discarded and thrown away. So will she be able to turn on him to aid these children when the time comes? That's an important question. You know, so far we haven't seen enough of Emery's determination to say that she will do the right thing when the time comes. And I suppose that's an interesting question, right? Because, again, something's going to happen. Things are coming to a head here in the show, and characters are going to be tested. And how they respond to said testing will determine a lot. Now, again, we know sort of like the grand design of things. We sort of know that ultimately, Clone Force 99 and Omega and what's going on in Tantus will not be successful to some degree or some extent because, you know, Palpatine doesn't get a successful clone body, right? There's all kinds of problems with the clone body that Palpatine ends up in, you know, 40 years down the road. So, like, there's a lot that can happen. There's a lot that we still need some clarity on. But we know that this version of Project Necromancer is about to get some serious bumps in the road and some serious stalls in it. It's going to stall out here. It's going to peter out. You know, maybe that's the death of Hemlock himself, but it may be because they don't get the blood from Omega, and that sets them back forever. Again, we still sort of have speculated where Grogu fits into this equation. We don't know when he comes into possession of the Empire, but we know it happens at some point. So there's a lot of blanks to kind of fill in here still, but ultimately putting, you know, sort of temper, at least even if it's temporarily derailing Project Necromancer, we know that the Batch is going to really set back Palpatine's plans here, and I can't wait to see how it happens, and I can't wait to see if Emery Carr is part of that derailing, or, you know, what happens next, because as we get into the next episode here, let's save that for next week, or for the next episode of the show. You know, we'll talk about what happens in the next episode then, but yeah, things are coming to a head here. We're going to get some big time action as we get into these final episodes. As we said, last week's episode with Ventress was sort of like the launching pad for the end of the series. And yeah, we get a really big dark one with this one, but a lot of vital information, a lot of development, and next episode after this one, the plot moves forward even quicker and faster, and it's all going to be awesome. This episode, I'm giving it 9 buckets. Again, we get none of our main characters, none of the current or former members of Clone Force 99 are featured in it, but really kind of getting into what's going on in Tantus, just how dark and sinister the Empire is about everything, abducting babies, testing children, All these things are horrific. It's sort of weird mixing in the light comedy of Toto 360, but I guess it's still a cartoon at on one level, so you got to kind of keep it from being oppressively bad, oppressively dark, and just making you cringy. Yeah, I give it $9. I loved it. Great episode, and I can't wait to talk to you guys about the next episode, which will be very, very soon as well. All right. This is the Mandavision Podcast. I thank you so, so much for checking it out. I am the host, Nargai Tom, and your support has always been greatly, greatly appreciated, Buckethead Nation. You guys continue to be the best fans on the planet. Reach out to us on the socials. We're at Mando_Vision on Twitter/X and Instagram. Email the show, mandavisiontom@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, and share the show with all the Mandalorians in your podcast, or all the Mandalorians in your covert. If possible, so inclined, and your podcasting platform allows it, sweet, sweet, sweet five-star reviews. They help us defeat the tyranny of the algorithm. The algorithm, the empire, they're both tyrants. You know that. You know that by now. So all your help in defeating them is truly, truly appreciated. All right, Buckethead Nation, we're going to be back to talk about episode 11 very, very soon. In the meantime, take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Be great Star Wars fans. Bring in some new Star Wars fans. Show them what's going on at the Empire and how just they need to go down. They need to lose. It's going to happen. Don't worry. But yeah, good stuff happening on the Bad Batch. All right, let's get out of here. We'll be back next time. All right, friends, you know this podcast can only end one way. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
I would like to see the baby.